Do you want every word of baseball analysis from Big Guy Fantasy Sports sent directly to your inbox each and every day? In that case, head on over to BigGuyFantasySports.com, find the box that says BGFS Daily Fantasy Blast, type in your name and email address, then click subscribe. It's that simple. Don't fall behind your competition on waiver wire trends, prospect scouting reports, streaming options, or even DFS picks to click. Subscribe to the BigGuyFantasySports.com newsletter today.
Hey, this is Robin Vandenberg, and I'm here to tell you that WBLZ Sports is so proud to bring every sports fan the hottest shows out there. Whether it's NFL, baseball, racing, soccer, golfing, even fishing, WBLZ Sports has you covered. You can even download our app on Google Play or check us out on WBLZSports.com. What makes us a step ahead of the others? It's called balls, baby.
You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And welcome to take two of episode 118 of the Nasty Cast. I am still joined by Nate Miller and Van Lee, of course, but good Lord, we ran into a lot of technical difficulties. My computer is still, I don't know what it's doing. It's like it's drowning in a pool of quicksand and like breathing its last gasp. I don't know what's going on. It's terrible. So if I sound less than stellar, it's because I'm using like standard earbud headphones on my iPhone right now, so apologize for the sound. But yeah, this is the emergency, like break glass in case of emergency type of situation. But boys, thanks for being patient while I try to sort through this unsuccessfully.
Absolutely. I mean, this is episode 118, so the age is up there. Things like this are going to happen. In fact, this would be the episode that it's legally able to smoke plus 100 years.
That's true.
Aren't the things they do in North Dakota with stuff that pisses them off, Dokken, like you throw it in a wood chipper, right? Like your computer there, and then you just take Buscemi it right into a million pieces.
Yeah, that's going in the wood chipper for sure. I think that computer has actually been with me for all 118 episodes, so perhaps wow. it's time for an upgrade.
It took this long for your computer to say, this show sucks, man.
It did. A lot of patience in that computer. I do applaud it.
Has there ever been like a North Dakotan politician whose whole platform was like a wood chipper in every home? I mean, I think he'd have my vote if I lived there.
Oh, absolutely. The only person that I could think of that was even close is like Jesse Ventura, but he was Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, proximity was close.
Yeah, he'd be down for that for sure. That is, I mean, Steve Buscemi is my hero. That should be known.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Not William H. Macy. I mean,
not so much. No,
definitely. Star of Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and of course, Fargo, that's the movie we're talking about. Maybe some out there. It is a popular movie. It came out 20 plus years ago. But of course, you know, a North Dakota native like yourself, Dokken, you're tired of hearing about that movie, right?
I love that movie. Oh, I'm not tired to hear about it at all. Actually, I don't hear about it that much.
Coen Brothers. It's great.
Yeah. And speaking of Minnesota, like down here in Georgia where I'm from, you may have figured out, yeah, that guy's from the South. But well, like people here, like I don't really mind, but people here like have a problem with people from Alabama. It's like if Georgia's 49th in intelligence level in the nation, Alabama's 72nd, that type of thing. Is it the same between North Dakota and Minnesota? Because, I mean, I'm married to a woman 12 years now that her whole family, I mean, she was born in Georgia because her parents smartly got the hell out of the frozen tundra that is all of that area up there, the South Canada. Yeah. Yep. I mean, do you hate people from Minnesota? I mean, is that kind of a thing?
No, actually, it works sort of the other way. Like, we have, it goes from east to west. Like, I think that, well, maybe Minnesota makes fun of Wisconsin as much as Wisconsin makes fun of Minnesota. I guess I can't remember, you know, since I don't live there, but I think Minnesota then makes fun of North Dakota and we make fun of Montanans.
Mm.
So like the classic joke, what time is it in Montana when a sheep gets stuck in the fence? It's mountain time.
What time is it?
Nice. My father's brother's wife, so my aunt through marriage is from Montana, so that's there's a connection there as well. They lived there for years, and I never got to visit Big Sky Country. Like, I've been to Minnesota a couple of times. I've always asked them, like, hey, can we go to Fargo? And there's like, there's nothing there.
There's really not. It's just an extremely normal state. And actually I love Montana too. Like, I hopefully will someday eventually get like a cabin up in the Glacier Park or something like that. And of course, Al Melchior, who graced us with his presence on this podcast in preseason, he now resides in Montana. So I got to bite my tongue a little bit.
I wish there were more like hokey colloquialism jokes about goats. There just aren't any. Now, that one was pretty polite. It was tame. And that's basically a product of the area, I would think, because you guys up there are just so darn polite all the time.
Yeah. Oh, you'd be surprised. There's plenty of dicks walking around.
No, I've always said, I'm like, Minnesota nice is a misnomer.
Yeah, there's plenty of crotchety people up here. Get off my
lawn. My wife's family's fine, but you know, I've met plenty of people. I think it's actually that they're typical run of the mill people, and just people in the South are just like, yeah, we'll open the door to anyone. Come on in, eat dinner with us, you know, whatever. It's we don't even care if we know you. Southern hospitality is a definite real thing. As long as you don't come down here and try to take our guns away, we have no problem with you.
Now, not that this episode hasn't already been hijacked, but I'm going to go ahead and hijack it for a brief moment here.
Okay.
Because it's a very special day. It is, in fact, Nathan Dawkins' birthday. How old are you, Nathan?
Old enough to purchase my own new computer, apparently. Happy birthday to me. I get to invest in a new PC. Ugh.
Yes, indeed. Happy birthday. Well, I have prepared something very special for you. If you have a moment, I'd like to read a traditional birthday haiku that I've prepared in your honor.
I was hoping it would be untraditional, but I suppose traditional will suffice.
Okay. Well, traditional is, of course, the 5-7-5 layout. So here you are. And this goes great with the conversation we just had. Look, a buffalo. Grazing. Eating. Delicious. No, wait. It's just Nate.
I am delicious.
You are delicious, and you are very buffalo-like, because if I remember correctly, there was some weird stat, and maybe that I made this up, because I do that a lot, but at some point, or maybe it's true now, there are more buffalo than people in North Dakota.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually, it's mandatory to own a buffalo and keep it in your backyard, even if you have an apartment. That's actually the real downside of renting here in Bismarck, is they don't have a buffalo room.
They don't have the space.
The standard. Sure. Before that law was passed. So now a lot of people have to use their spare bedrooms for the buffalo room rather than have its own designated buffalo room.
Sure.
Which it's just really messy and also dangerous, because they will stab you with their horns right in your heart.
That's rough.
If it's not trained properly, but yeah.
I'm going to tie all this together for you guys, because you're going to get a van fact, which is not really about me.
Sweet. Here
you
go.
So, buffalo, right? That's what we're just talking about. We're talking
buffalo.
About the north and all the buffalo.
Am I
do you
right?
know what? Do you know what human being owns the most buffalo in the United States? That human being is Ted Turner.
Yes.
Who is former owner, there may be still ones, I don't know, of CNN, which is headquartered where Nate Miller is.
Oh, yes. About 20 minutes away. TBS, the superstation, CNN, Cartoon Network. No, I wish he still owned the Braves, but he does not. You know, it's the whole late 90s AOL Time Warner merger, and then Liberty Media stepped in, purchased the Braves, and they're in Colorado, so they don't give a flying flip. Yeah. And now it's been Liberty Media for quite some time. But yes, Ted Turner is quite a figure in Atlanta, GR. And if you're into wrestling, as we call it, around these parts, a WCW, that's yeah. That's I was definitely a 90s kid screaming Goldberg, but you know, anyway. I speak differently now. I've grown up, gained an intellect, and
well, that's debatable.
Yeah, and not about baseball, just about like how to plug in this microphone in front of me and make my computer work.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's more than I can say at this point. I don't think my computer is coming back.
Speaking of birthday ages, Dawkins, it's like this. When you've reached the age where you know that the only birthday present you're getting is one you paid for yourself, it's just, you just stop counting.
Yes, exactly. That's what I am facing now. Sweet. Very, very excited. But you know what I am actually excited for is today's show, which we will talk about.
Start now.
Yeah, which we'll actually start now. We'll talk about a little baseball. We're going to probably, we discussed this beforehand once, not to pull back the curtain too far. So let's kind of gloss over this a little bit. We got Adrian Gonzalez to the disabled list, discussing like how much we like Cody Bellinger. Basically, give me a quick yes or no. What are we thinking in standard 12-team mixed leagues? Is he a must-own?
I would say must might be a strong word, but we're maybe he's us-ed owned, and the M is sneaking its way on there. Yeah, he's been quite impressive.
I'm giving it a full yes.
Okay, yeah, I think I've got a fuller yes than Nate does, which sounds kind of weird to say. It came out as a bit of a euphemism, but yeah. Very encouraging what we see from Bellinger so far. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked on that guy. And then Matt Harvey, moving on much quicker than we did before. Suspended 3 games. Let's get back into this. So, boy, that was an accidental like slip right there, and that sounded super Minnesotan. Let's get back to Matt Harvey.
He's talking about me now. Always swill.
I think the accent comes out of me a little bit more with the more beer I drink, which, since this is basically the second podcast we're recording at this point, might be a little bit worse because, you know, since it's my birthday and all, I decided to treat myself with a couple beers. The wood chipper. I'm literally drinking a Fargo Brewing wood chipper, which is delicious, delicious IPA.
Nice. I wish I was drinking that and not this BS lime coconut water that I drink to keep my voice while we're because I've actually had about a month ago, and I don't know if either one of you guys have ever done this. I mean, we all get that stitch in the back of our throat every now and then. Speaking of Matt Harvey, I was doing a show, and who was co-host? It was a show with Ron Rigney, you know, one of our writers at Big Guy Fantasy Sports. Yeah, we were doing a show, and then suddenly I could not speak. Like that was one of those like, okay, I'm gonna move off the mic here, cough. That didn't do it. Like I was trying to speak, no sound was coming out. So now I do things like drink nasty fluids. It's one of those things. I wish I was drinking beer, but for the sake of providing worse analysis than I already do, I'm gonna steer clear, and then later on I'm gonna drink the pine tree, as my wife would call it, raiding my gin cabinet.
Oh hell yeah, I love me some gin. Yeah, see, like my analysis can't get any worse, so what the hell, I'll just drink some beer anyway. Yeah, I've got no problem spitting out stupid horrible words. Apparently it's just plugging things into electronics that doesn't work so well to me. But Van, hey, let's go over to you. Matt Harvey, give us a quick rundown of your value for him in redraft and dynasty formats.
Sure. Matt Harvey, of course, the whole ordeal has been that he got drunk one night, apparently played some golf, and then didn't show up for a game for the Mets. I don't know what to think about that. I think the Mets are making too big of a deal about it. But I also think because of this big circus that they're providing, I think Harvey's probably on his way out of the Mets organization. I think they try and keep him this year. Maybe they try and trade him. I don't think they're going to be in it. So we'll see in a few months. I like him. Career-wise, I think expectations are, of course, tempered from the ace status he used to be, but I think it could be a solid number three with some number two upside. In redraft leagues this year, I don't think I'm going to mess with it. I mean, I don't think the person who has him is going to give him up for really the value that they're going to be offered. And if you already have him, just hang on to him and see what you can get out of it. But dynasty, I'll still go for a target on him on with that.
All right, Nate, what do you think?
And these are the days of our lives. Maybe you prefer General Hospital, because that's kind of the show that the Mets are putting on right now. Anyway, soap operas aside, this was one massive one. I found it particularly entertaining. I typically look away from these stories, but this is one of those car crashes that you're just goosenecking the whole time until you have your own wreck and, you know, everything falls apart. But Matt Harvey, yeah, Van kind of alludes to it there. Long term, I'm still a believer in this guy. Dynasty leagues, maybe keeper style. You know, you might take a chance here. This season, I don't know. I'm going to have to see it. I believe he's on tap to start Friday. I'm interested to see how that one goes because people are saying, well, he's pitching horribly. And the strikeout rate wasn't there. Maybe he's getting a little unlucky. But he was – I mean, the ERA was sub three through his first few starts until my Braves got a hold of him and pounded his face into the dirt. And I hate everything to do with the Mets and Phillies and Nationals. So I found that particularly entertaining. And then apparently the Braves made him drink, as Van alludes to, and hopefully – so you docking, there it is, man. It's like you show up for work even though you're drinking, but apparently Matt Harvey can't.
And real quick point I want to make is that, I mean, Harvey's coming off the thoracic outlet syndrome, yeah. Surgery. I mean, I'm the doctor here and I can't even say it. Anyway, so he's coming off of that. So we knew he had a little bit of an injury thing, but the Mets still are doing this thing where I think it was Syndergaard had to skip a day, so they bumped Harvey up. They've done that twice. So quit screwing with his schedule. He already was a bit of a health risk. Put him on a set schedule and stick to it. Don't mess with that guy. Do that with someone else.
Yeah, he's more Robin than the Dark Knight of Gotham at this point, though.
He is a Joker, that's for sure. I just can't. No matter the format, I'm just really not interested in Matt Harvey at this point. I don't care if he's losing the girlfriends to Julian Edelman or anybody else for that matter. A number three, I think, at this point. You know, if you can buy low on him in Dynasty and get that, then good on you. But I'm just not interested. I think I'm just going to be happy to stand pat wherever I'm at, and whoever is stuck with Matt Harvey, you know, sucks for them. I think he could. I'm good just leaving him with whatever team he's on and just avoiding him personally, especially like redraft this year. Gosh, just such a mess. I'm not interested at all. Jameson Taillon, we just want to wish him his best as he underwent ball removal surgery, I guess, to put it gently. Certainly very scary, and we wish him all the best.
Indeed, certainly.
Steven Piscotty in St. Louis, he's on the DL. Sounds like it's going to be a minimum stay. The hamstring injury, just bad enough to put him on the DL. But let's talk about Tommy Pham and Matt Adams real quick. Nate, do you like either one of these guys as a fill-in for Piscotty?
I like biscotti with my coffee. I don't, I'll say that. But Pham, yeah, I've often called him Almond instead of Steven. Just a particular flavor preference there.
Yeah, like that's – he sounds like what when my five-year-old tries to say like spaghetti. It's biscotti.
I like these you know, we sometimes call them post-hype prospects, but the Cardinals just take it even beyond that. And they're like, yeah, you're not playing in the bigs until you're 30. I mean, that's kind of their MO. I mean, it works. It makes some of their offensive players short-lived. But Piscotty, I'm a fan of his. I was, you know, I had a lot of shares of him last season. I like to play in OBP leagues. He was a definite asset in that format. But, yeah, the fill-ins, Matt Adams, I mean, I think he did something to anger the Cardinals long, long ago, and they're just like, welcome to baseball purgatory where, yeah, you might have power. You might be a prototypical DH. We're not going to play you, but we're not going to send you anywhere else to play for anyone else. So just here and take up space on the bench and come off the bench and, you know, pinch hit once in a while. I'd like to see him get more at-bats. I think he could be a nice, strong side of a platoon. Power source, but anyway, not there. Tommy Pham, this guy, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm a fan or if I'm just disgusted by the three home runs he hit in Atlanta this past weekend, but it impressed me. I think he hit one that went three counties over, maybe over into the state of Alabama, over there from SunTrust Park. But yeah, Tommy Pham has shown some power, and he's another one of those guys. I mean, this guy has been in the Cardinals system since 2006. And, I mean, I'd like to see him get his opportunity and play some more, even if it's just against lefties. If you're in an NL only, maybe you take a flyer on Adams and Pham.
Okay, Van, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, Pham is probably the more interesting of the two to me, and I'm still not that interested. He's got some power. He doesn't really hit for average. you did mention that the Piscotty DL stay is probably going to be short-lived. I guess I feel like if hopefully you already have a replacement on your bench that would perform as well or if not better than Pham would. But if not, and you need some cheap power, I think he'll be okay. Ultimately, I like him as a fourth outfielder. I think he's a really good fourth outfielder, but I think if you have to start relying on him, you get in a little trouble. Matt Adams really doesn't interest me at all. I know he lost the weight, but he's still just, there's just not a whole lot to him. I do think the Cardinals probably ruined is a strong word, but I feel like they kind of ruined him because they just didn't play him as they should. And we're at the point in his career where adjustments probably aren't going to be made as well. I don't know. Maybe he pulls a Yonder Alonso and suddenly becomes, you know, 50 home run hitter, but whatever. But anyway, not that much of a fan of Matt Adams.
What about Yonder Alonso, all-time stud?
Yeah. You said that last week, and I'm still looking over yonder to see. I'm sorry.
It had to be done.
Tell you what, I wrote him up so many times and talked about him last week. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm totally off of Matt Adams. Tommy Pham, yeah, lots of power, even some speed too. So despite being like a post type sleeper at nearly 30 years old, yeah. But you know what? If you've got Stephen Piscotty, actually, if you don't have Stephen Piscotty, not only does he sound like a delicious Italian treat, I think you should buy low right now. If you look at his strikeout and walk rates, nearly even, a huge walk rate, and just a .283 BABIP, .241 average. But man, he's, you know, in only two home runs too. But he's been crushing the ball, 39% hard contact rate.
Yeah.
You'd like to see him put more balls in the air, but I think that he's really underperformed what he should have to this point. And especially with this DL stay, you might be able to pry him from some owner for really cheap. And so I think he makes for a really nice buy low.
I've definitely been attempting to do some of that in a couple of my leagues, sitting there on DLs. I'm like, yeah, maybe I can get him on the cheap. But I will say, looking at the Cardinals outfield, we saw Dexter Fowler beat up a little bit. If I do have a quick new entrant in the all MLB name team, and that's Magnurus Sierra. How about this kid?
Yeah.
That has to be a supervillain name. Come on.
I had him in two of my dynasty leagues. Big fan.
Yeah.
And he's holding his own already. He's 21 right now. Yeah, I still think he'll be sent down when Piscotty comes back, but definitely a name to own in dynasty leagues for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, enough news. Let's go on to legit or quit, and we might abbreviate this depending on how long we run since we're basically on take two of this entire podcast. but we're going to start off with a struggling starter, and my computer is actually starting to work again. I had all of their statistics written down. I'll try to call them up again, but right now I'll just say Jake Arrieta and let it fly to you, Van. What do you think? Is he going to right the ship, or are you just selling?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm selling. I would hang on to him. I if I'm given a choice of legit or quit, I'm probably going to say, yeah, this doesn't make sense, but I'm going to say quit because he's not Jake Arrieta of yore. He's a new guy. The strikeouts have been there this year. The velocity's down a little bit. The control's a little spottier than it used to be. And that was, I can't remember that huge stretch a few years ago. His control was elite. So I think he's still good, but he's no longer, you know, top five pitcher good. And shout out to co-host of my podcast, the backup catcher, Brian Vaughn, because when we did our offseason rankings, he dropped Arrieta down in like the 18 to 20 range or something like that. And I think that's pretty legit. I think that's kind of where he's going to end up at the end of the year. So you could still get some value, and he's certainly better than he's pitching right now, but he's no longer the clear-cut number one.
What are your thoughts, Nate?
Yeah, I don't think that Coors Field is the place to really get back on track for a struggling pitcher. But I will say this, you know, kind of some of the stuff Van's pointing out there, you know, if you look back at 2015, Arrieta's Cy Young year, I mean, 94.6 average velocity on his fastball. This season, it's 92.0. The cutter that he had that was so good in 2015, you know, used it almost 30% of the time that season, and it was up over 90 miles an hour. Now it's down to 87 miles an hour, and he's using it only 18% of the time. Definitely some things to look at here. I'm with Van. I don't think He's, I mean, top 20 might be pushing it. He's probably in that 21 to 30 range of SP. That's still very usable in fantasy leagues. And so I do think he will rebound. I do think he might be one of the better buy low targets out there right now. And I've tried to get him for dirt cheap. Too bad that name is still most people who own him aren't willing to let it go just yet. So I would have to say I'm actually hoping for one or two more subpar starts out of Arrieta. Maybe that price tag comes down, then I'm targeting him because I think he can rebound. I think he can be a top 30 SP the rest of the way.
Yeah, the days of him, being that elite ace appear to be gone, like you said, with the velocity. That'd be a pretty good baseball, like, mockumentary, perhaps, Gone with the Velocity. Maybe we can work that into the Scout Pig film that we were working on, Ben.
that's perfect.
That'll be the sequel, Gone with the Velocity. So, yeah, I agree that I would try to buy low on Jake Arrieta and expect maybe number three numbers from him. But I don't think anybody's selling at this point. It's going to have to get even worse for a longer stretch. Let's go back to the positive side of things. And now that I have my numbers called up again, we've got AJ Griffin. We're going to talk about him. He fired a four-hit shutout yesterday he plays for Daddy. Who the hell was that against? Anyway, he's got 29 to 30 innings pitched this year. 8.29 K per nine, 1.84 walks per nine, and a shiny 2.45 ERA. Nate, I heard you recommend him, I believe, on the latest BG Baseball podcast. So you got to be all over this guy.
Oh, yes, I did. And that game came against the Padres. That had a lot to do with it. Interestingly enough, yeah, his strikeout rate, and you look back over his career, he's not a guy with a huge strikeout rate, 7.7 for his career. That 8.3 this season would be a career high if it maintained there. Last season, he got it up above 8. This is a guy who missed all of 2014 and 15, didn't pitch in the big leagues. Either of those seasons, I liked him in Oakland back in 2012 and 2013, had big shares of him then. Starting to like him now. Last season was a comeback from injury year. He had his moments, but ultimately ended up with an ERA over 5. Texas isn't the best place to pitch. As much as I like him, and I think you should hang on to him for a little bit, he might be turning into a sell high candidate because he is pitching over his head. But it's been awfully impressive thus far, so I wouldn't mind maintaining him, or if you can actually get good above his typical value, I would trade him as well.
Yeah, and of course, I screwed him up with the Padres because Trevor Cahill, we're going to talk about him next. So I got my wires crossed there. I'm all flustered. Go ahead and talk, Van, while I try to straighten myself.
Sure. AJ Griffin is serviceable is the word I would use to describe him. If you remember, he did this last year, too, coming out of the gate. He was pretty strong because I know I picked him up in a few leagues. And while I don't think we've got, Cy Young season coming on here, I think he holds value. I think ERA-wise, I think he'll probably finish about what he did in 2013, which is 3.8, which is fine. I mean, that's not terrible at all. This year, the home runs are down. The hits are down. The K per nine is in line with what he did last year, though it's above what he did when he first came into the league with Oakland, though I think that can be attributed to just changes in the industry. People are striking out more, but the walks are way down. So that's kind of an important aspect there. So if his control's good and if he stays healthy, I think you've got a viable guy, a guy here who can eat up some innings. You certainly didn't pay anything for him, so no one did. So I like him enough to say, keep him on your team, try and trade him if you can get good value, but if you don't, keep him around as an injury filler.
Yeah, and, Nate, like you said, as far as recommending him for streaming matchups, like against the Padres, I think that's largely what the results were, is like that was the Padres. I think he's probably, like you said, more of a 3-8 guy, closer to 4 ERA, 37% hard contact allowed so far this year. It doesn't strike me with a lot of confidence, nor does a fly ball profile pitching in Texas, so. He's a streamer for me, nothing more at this point. But Trevor Cahill, perhaps, is a guy we might be a little bit more excited about. 35 and a third innings pitched so far. 11.21 K per nine, over 11 strikeouts per nine, although over 4 walks per nine as well, with a 3.06 ERA. Van, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on Trevor Cahill moving forward?
I'm probably going to be one of the few guys who's pretty pessimistic with Cahill. He's walking way, 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 way too many people. He's got, a 4.1 walk per nine. And last year, he had a 4.8 walk per nine. So control is not his best asset. However, a lot of the walks come because his stuff moves so much. So that's a good problem to have rather than just pure control issues where you just can't spot your fastball. With him, it's he can't control his off-speed stuff because it's so good. So there's potential there. His ERA is at 3.06. I think that's still too low. I could see him finishing the year anywhere. I could see him finishing below four, but I'm not going to say he's an elite level guy with control that bad. You continue walking guys, eventually you're going to start getting hit a little more. The runs are going to score. So I wouldn't recommend targeting him, but if you have him, ride the wave.
Are you riding the wave, Nate?
Yeah, I am in the short term. I think that's what Van's getting at there. I would say there's an interesting thing to definitely keep in mind, might make Trevor Cahill a matchup-based streamer in your standard depth leagues. Now, if you're looking NL only or even deeper than 12 teams, I think he's a definite add if you can get him. Later, I'm going to recommend him as my streamer for this week, so that's just a preview there. But the home-road splits with him right now, man. And, of course, we're short in the season. He's only made six starts. He's got three starts on the road, three starts at home under his belt. 0.49 ERA. In Petco, I think that's good. And then on the road, 5.82, which I think is not good. So, yeah, there's the thing. And you're talking about, I mean, and the whip is even more ridiculous. Now, this home road splits, I mean, it's kind of one of those things you might have trouble explaining. But at home, a whip of 0.71, and on the road, a whip of 1.65. If, like I said, if you're in a deeper league, if you're in an only league, pick up this guy, pitch him in Petco. If you like to play the daily game as I do, and so many out there as well, pitch this guy when he's at home. I did this past week and it worked out just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did manage to add him in my NL only league, the FSWA league, no less, with a bunch of sharps. He was out there last week. I just picked him up. It was crazy. So I was very excited to add him. And, yeah, I mean, he's been using his curveball a lot more this year. That explains a lot more of the strikeouts. Yep. It's been a really nice pitch for him. So, yeah, definitely at least a matchup-based play moving forward. And probably not a guy who's going to give you a ton of innings. Like, if he does manage to stay healthy and not implode, he might not even finish the season just because you look at his innings pitch totals over the last couple of years, and there's just about nothing because he was primarily a reliever. So kind of remains to be seen how long they're gonna leave him out there as a starter.
Speaking of that curveball, man, I know I read this going into his previous start. His most recent start was something along the lines of more than 50% of the swings on his curveball have come up empty. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah, wow. It's like he should have thrown that pitch more in his career or something.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, if you remember, I mean, the guy's been up since 2009, but he was only 21 years old. So he's still sitting right kind of in the middle of his prime. And as you said, he doesn't have that many innings on his arm the past few years. I mean, he's interesting. He's an interesting case. Right now I've got him and I'm going to ride it until he doesn't look good anymore.
Yeah, so you're saying maybe be a little more hesitant to move him in dynasty leagues as well.
Yeah, I think you could command a sell high here. I mean, that's it, you know, really sell him up. You know, if you're trying to negotiate somebody's kind of hesitant, you know, that you're trying to trade Cahill to, tell them the stuff we're talking about. The guy has completely reinvented himself. I mean, when you're looking at an 11 strikeouts per nine for a guy who has a career 6.5, I just like to know whose body he possessed in the offseason.
Right on. All right. Let's see. Who's our next victim? Derek Holland. Nate, we'll start with you. He's got 35 and two-thirds innings pitched so far this year. 7.57 K per nine with just a shade on over three walks per nine and a 2.02 ERA. Do you think he will keep it up?
No.
All right, moving on.
I think Greg Holland will. I don't think Derek Holland will. But again, I mean, similarly to Cahill, obviously the crazy strikeout rate isn't there, but it's solid. I mean, we have seen Derek Holland. Injuries are the name of the game here as well. We haven't seen more than 20 starts out of him since 2013. He was quite good that season. He's serviceable, but AO only.
All right, Van, you have any different thoughts?
No, I pretty much agree. One key thing to point out here, of course, is the ERA is at 2.02, the FIP's at 3.68. So the FIP is still good if that's an indicator of what he's actually going to pitch as. However, it's not a 2.02 ERA. I think his biggest asset lies in the fact that he looks like Kylo Ren from Star Wars, the new one. Or I guess it would be his worst asset, depending on your perspective. But there you go.
Well, does he still? I haven't seen him this year. Does he still have that crazy stash?
No, no, he got rid of it. Oh, yeah. Sadly.
That explains. I mean, there's no magic there if you don't have the stash. But yeah, no, I'm with you guys. And like you said, man, he's been fairly lucky in the home run for fly ball department right now at 6.4% home run for fly ball. Additionally to that, if you look at his hard contact rate so far, 38%. Yikes. I mean, this is just like a house of cards that's waiting to fall. I have no interest whatsoever in Derek Holland moving forward. So we shall move on. We're in perfect lockstep on that one. Kenta Maeda is the next guy we're going to talk about then. 31 innings pitched so far, over 10 strikeouts per nine. However, he does have a 5.81 ERA. The walks are good at 2.61. But, Ben, what do you think about Maeda moving forward?
It's kind of an interesting story with him. I remember being hesitant to have a whole lot to do with him because I'm wary of a lot of the Japanese pitchers, particularly like him who's thrown a lot of innings over there, because they treat their pitchers so differently. They throw as much and as often as humanly possible. So I'm always wary about the health when they come over. But last year he showed me that health was not really an issue. He threw 175 innings, was pretty good. I was high on him coming into this year, but he's kind of struggled. Now there's two ways to look at it. The strikeouts and the walks are the exact same as it was last year. Strikeouts up a little bit more, I should say. However, the ERA, the whip, FIP, the hits per nine, the home runs per nine, that's all up. So is this unlucky or is this course correction? I'm at the point where as a 29-year-old who has a ton of innings on his arm, I'm ready to sell. I'll back out. I will hold on to him. Hopefully wait until he strings a few good starts together and then try and move him for a piece. I mean, obviously you're not going to get value here with a almost six ERA, but I'm out on Maeda. I think I'll let somebody else take the risk on him.
All right, Nate, what do you think?
Well, I mean, we're sitting here recording on a Wednesday night and Kenta Maeda has just taken the mound actually, as we're speaking. And I think, so as the show comes out here Thursday, and if you're listening to Friday or maybe over the weekend, you look back at that Wednesday start, I think that might be able to tell you a lot. Honestly, for me though, the way this Dodgers rotation's in flux with six guys in it, maybe they've got nine guys in it. I don't know. If your name's not Kershaw, I'm not really on. I have this thing with Brandon McCarthy and Alex Wood. Alex Wood going back, you know, Braves prospect. He's from my area here. I've always liked these guys. So it's kind of that partiality stuff. But, yeah, mostly if your name's not Kershaw, I'm out in a redraft league for the Dodgers pitchers.
Interesting. Well, I'm the only one who appears to be somewhat confident then in Maeda bounce back.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that you don't like is if you play in a quality starts league like I do, a lot of the times, man, he can't even make it out of the sixth inning. Yeah. And if you're looking for the quality starts, that's just going to kill you right there. But he does pitch for a very good Dodgers team. So if you're just in a standard 5x5, he could still get you a lot of wings. So all you have to do is, pitch five innings for there. But swinging strike rate so far, 15%, is very, very nice. And just a 68% contact allowed. Obviously, strikeout minus walk rate is not everything. Just look at Michael Pineda. But I feel like Maeda has, he's got some upside. I think he can be a number three moving forward. And perhaps people are ready to jump ship at this point with an ERA north of five, nearing six. So I have a little bit more confidence in you guys in Maeda. Let's move to – we got our five pitchers out of the way. Let's talk about five different hitters now. And the first one is going to be Eugenio Suarez, who we named a NastyCast episode after way back in the day. I think that was like 2 years ago. We called it Juanita Suarez. that was his mother, I believe. Oh, God, I forget how that even went. Anyway, that is neither here nor there. Longtime fans might get a kick out of that. But 129 plate appearances so far. He's been very good. Seven home runs, one steal, 23 runs scored, 22 RBI. Slash line of 316, 395, 579. So, Nate, start us off here. What do you think about Suarez moving forward? Is this legit?
Well, we all knew the Reds were going to be contenders, right? I mean, this lineup was just good.
Oh, yeah.
Was just good. I mean, they still don't have any pitching.
And the Twins.
I don't know how this team is winning anything with that pitching staff. And then they're like, hey, Amir Garrett, that's our new ace. Why don't you go to the minors? I mean – I mean, Suarez last season, I mean, he gave you 20 homers and double-digit steals. That park obviously helps. I think the Reds lineup is legit. I was on the Reds lineup before the season started. It's the pitching, obviously. Raisel Iglesias, man, has he been sick at the end of the bullpen? But, you know, the rotation is like – to say it leaves something to be desired, I would say it leaves four or five things to be desired.
The Angels think their rotation is pretty good or pretty bad. That's how it is.
Tyler Skaggs in his current condition could pitch better than most of the Reds. but Eugenio Suarez, I mean, he's not the only I'm buying it because there's plenty of protection out lineup. I think this lineup is going to score runs all season as long as it's healthy. Joey Votto has quit walking and started crushing the ball over the fence. I mean, he's always going to walk, but I like seeing the power surge back for him. Zach Cozart is another guy that's really putting it together. I'm a believer in him. So there's plenty of protection up and down this lineup. I think Suarez is going to have a chance. I'm not going to be surprised if this guy ends up with 20 to 25 homers and 100 RBIs coming in the season.
Very nice. Van, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in. Look, he's 25, so he's following a progressive curve. He did hit 20 homers last year, so we already know that's possible. He has 7 this year. Obviously, a triple slash of 316, 395, 579 is not really sustainable here, and I don't think he's really going to do that. But I think he can be pretty good. I think at the end of the year, we can see a 270 average, a good OBP, and some decent slugging. So I'm on board. I think he provides some value, and he's taken that jump from, you know, bench guy to must start in most leagues for me.
Yeah, I'm digging it too. And, you know, when we talked his name was brought up in the preseason, and when I believe that was the episode we had Joe Pisapia on the show, and he brought up his horrible splits. He's really struggled against righties last year. 299 weighted on base against right-handed pitching last year. 22% line drive rate, 34% hard contact rate was not bad. 0.31 walks per strikeout. But this year, he has been much, much better so far. 406 weighted on base against right-handed pitching with 37% hard contact, 25% line drive rate. And that walk to strikeout ratio has almost doubled at 0.61. And that is the kind of improvement against right-handed pitching that could make this really complete player and, you know, a real solid contributor in all assets going forward. You know, he can hit double-digit stolen bases and 20, 25 home runs, you know, and like you said, I think it's in the cards with a good walk rate. So I think this is a guy who is going to keep this up.
I would say this. I mean, you talk about a guy, and yeah, I mean, last season we saw him rake against lefties, as I've mentioned. You know, I'm a big DFS player and would always put him in a lineup in Cincinnati against a, you know, even an average to below average lefty. But this season, I mean, the Reds, I mean, this is just some of those scheduling anomalies. They've barely played any lefties. Suarez only has 23 plate appearances against left-handed pitchers this season so far. So most of these numbers have come against righties. That's encouraging to see. Speaking of the Reds, though, just a bit off topic here, you know, but I did bring up Amir Garrett. What are you telling your fan base? Just interested to get both your guys' takes here. What are you telling your fan base when you're in first place and then you send your best starting pitcher to AAA?
Well, I tell you what, that's like renting an apartment without a buffalo room. You know,
it's just it's just crazy talk,
it's chicanery, it's unnecessary.
I don't think we're going to see Amir Garrett in the minors very long.
Yeah. No, and I'm not quite as high on him as a lot of people, but no, I mean, I don't care how high you're on it. He should probably be pitching there. I have a quick fact here. This blows my mind, by the way. I was looking at Eugenio Suarez's baseball reference page. He leads the National League in WAR.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's more than Zimmerman, Harper, Freeman. That's insane. I mean, now that takes defense into account, but still, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's picking it at the hot corner. That was one knock on him as well. You know, he was a shortstop, I believe, with Detroit. I think I'm correct about that. And then, they have Cozart, so they moved him to third base when he came to Cincinnati, and it was a trial by fire, and, you know, the ball gets on you quick on the hot corner. But, yeah, apparently he's come a long way. I actually heard an interview with the Reds general manager recently, and they were just singing the praises of this guy because, you know, defense and putting it all together as an offensive player. So, yeah, I think this is a buy across the board here.
Yeah, absolutely. His swinging strike rate is down. Contact rate is up. It's very, very patient hitter. So, yeah, it all looks to be adding up. Awesome stuff. So let's move on to, on the flip side, we got a struggling star, and that is Carlos Gonzalez, who in 121 plate appearances has just two home runs, 11 runs scored, and 7 RBI, slashing 194, 264, 296. And let's see, I believe we're going to start with you on this one, Ben. What do you think about Carlos Gonzalez?
I still think he's a legit hitter, but he's certainly falling. I mean, I think most people have valued him accordingly. I mean, we started kind of discounting him as early as 2 years ago. He still has power. He can still hit the ball. I think he's just slumping. So that's all it is for me. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to play 165 games or 162 games a year and, you know, hit 40 home runs anymore, but he's too good of a hitter to be this bad. So I'm still kind of buying on him. I'm curious to see what the end of season numbers are, but I still think there's plenty of value to be had here.
What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think he's an ultimate buy low hitter right now. I mean, people come down on him because anytime you've got a guy who, I mean, we know he was at minimum a mid first rounder just a few years ago. Anytime you've got a guy like that and then they start falling back into maybe they're a fourth round draft pick, maybe they're a sixth round draft pick, people seem to take an approach with them and all too often that, okay, well, they suck now. No, they don't suck. They're just not the player that they used to be. So Van is correct. He's not the guy that he used to be. He's not going to give you 35 homers, 25 steals, anything like that anymore. But, I mean, you look back to last season, you're still looking at 25 homers, 100 RBIs, a guy that posted an 855 OPS. He's still swinging the bat in Coors Field. As long as he's hitting in the middle of the Rockies lineup and swinging it in Coors Field half the time, he could be traded. We've heard that for 2 or 3 years now. But as long as he's a Rocky, I think he's a buy low candidate right now, and he's going to pick it up here sooner rather than later. Probably not, now that I said that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Just a tremendous buy low target right now. Look at his BABIP from last year, even his career BABIP, obviously Coors Field helping to inflate that. 346 BABIP last year, 333 career BABIP, 229 right now, leading to that 194 batting average. And there is really nothing that he's done to deserve that aside from just wretched, wretched luck. You know, line drive rate is low at 15%, and ground ball rate is higher than you would like to see it, certainly at 53%. So obviously you might be looking more at like the 25 home runs and the 30 in the past, you know, 25 home runs last year, like you said, you know, so that's a little bit of a downside. So that's, you know, between that and the injury history, that tempers your expectations a little bit as far as what exactly you can get out of him. And the hard contact is down a little bit, but still at 33%. You're not looking at any reasons why he should have a freaking 229 BABIP right now. Yeah. That's just crazy. And of course, Field, that's going to, like you said, Nate, that's going to correct in a hurry. We're all on board the buy low train on Carlos Gonzalez. Of course, keep in mind the injury history. You might not get any of the season, but you might trade him and he'll be done for the season by the time you get him. But that might further deflate his price. So moving on to Scott Schebler. He has been one of the hottest bats, hotter bats, I guess, that we're going to be talking about. 125 plate appearances so far this year, 9 home runs, 15 runs scored, 20 RBI, 2 stolen bases is a nice little bonus there. Slashing 250, 328, 545. Nate, what do you think about Scott Schebler?
No, I've been on him, and I talked about him. You brought up BG Baseball Podcast, the other baseball show for the BGFS Network. And, yeah, I was on this guy a couple weeks ago. Again, another Cincinnati Red, another young guy with power in that stadium. Balls, I mean, pop-ups fly out of there. As long as Schebler can keep making contact, I don't see any reason he can't be a 30-homer guy. We saw Adam Duvall break out similarly last season. I think Schebler can do it this season. And – yeah, I mean, in standard depth mixed leagues, he's fringy. Anything deeper, I think he's – if you're in a 5 outfielder league, especially.
Yeah, right on. Ben, what do you say?
Yeah, he's interesting. I'll say that. I'm not too enamored with him. And, in fact, the biggest thing with him with me was that I was hoping he would fail really badly, really fast, so we get to see Jesse Winker quickly. But with him succeeding, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But if you look at his numbers, really everything's in line with what he's done in his career, with the exception of more home runs. So I don't necessarily know if I fully believe the additional home run output, but Nate was right. He hits in a really good park. Balls fly out of there. This could be something to watch. I'm going to ride the wave, but I'm not going to pay for it. Like you said, fringy in some mixed leagues, but worth it while he's the hot hand.
Yeah, in the 13-team BGFS Dynasty Classic, for example, he was just sitting out there on the waiver wire. I picked him up last week because I had everybody on my team hitting the disabled list. So I picked him up, and, you know, the strikeout rate is up, and the walk rate is league average, certainly nothing to write home about. But you look at where some of this power is coming from. He's simply putting more balls in the air, perhaps a la Yonder Alonso. His fly ball rate isn't quite as grossly up as it is with Alonso, but fly ball rate, 30% a year ago, 42% so far this year. And he pulls a lot of those balls in the air too, and that has led to an increased exit velocity and hard contact rate. Hard contact rate is up 3% so far, up to 36%. And obviously, you know, 27% home run for fly ball, that's going to go down. He's not going to hit 50 home runs this year, but you know, I think it's going to be enough to keep him mixed league relevant. And I believe in that ridiculous Reds lineup right now? No. But I think Schebler has proven himself to be good enough to fend off the Jesse Winker until much later on in the season. You know, when you're hitting that many fly balls, you can be prone to deflated, you know, BABIP and batting average and a cold streak. And so if he does find himself amidst a pretty bad cold streak, you could see the Reds pulling the plug on him a lot faster than they would with a more established guy. So I would tread cautiously, I guess, in more shallow leagues. But I do like Scott Schebler, especially in deeper leagues. But another hot starter, we're going to go here, our second to last guy in legit or quit here, Jay Bruce. Through 138 plate appearances, he has 9 bombs, 21 runs scored, 25 RBI, slashing a hefty 276, 355, 569. And he actually hit his 10th home run today, so those numbers are already old. So let's see. We're going to start with you on this one, Van. Jay Bruce, I feel like we traded him once in the Dynasty League. Or was that somebody else?
We did. We traded him last year. I don't remember who I traded him to you for someone, and then he was awful after I traded him to you. And that's kind of my point here. He did this last year. He was pretty good early on. I think you're going to wait for the inevitable regression to the mean. His average is probably going to fall 30 points. And for it to fall 30 points, that means he has to hit 60 points less. So he has power. He is what he is. I think it's as advertised. He's actually younger than I would think because it feels like he's been around forever, but he also started really young. So he's all right, but I'm not that fascinated with this.
Nate, are you any higher?
I mean, yeah, it's one of those lukewarm. I mean, we've seen this out of Jay Bruce before. He's got plenty of power. Don't put him in a lineup if the Mets or whatever team he might end up on, because I think you could see a trade down the road involving him. Don't put him in the lineup against a lefty because he's terrible against lefties. Yeah. All of this comes against righties. And if you're in a daily lineup moves league, you know, as long as you see the Mets playing a righty, I think you ride this out. He's a power source, and he always has been. Not much of any, pretty average everywhere else.
Yeah, definitely sucking against lefties caps his value for sure. But yeah, he's still pulling the ball a fair bit, and he is putting the ball in the air again more. Yeah, you know, that's a trend that we're seeing more and more this year. Is he's upped his fly ball rate 13% from last year. And, you know, with that pull rate, that's given him a 44% hard contact rate, up from 38%, which was even nice a year ago. 44%, I guess I didn't look it up, but that's got to be one of the better marks in the league to this point. So I think 30 home runs you're looking at again. And he had 99 RBI last year, depending on where he goes. Probably when, not if, he is traded. Perhaps he could push 100 RBI again this year. And, yeah, I'm higher on him. I've always been kind of high on Jay Bruce. Everybody hates Jay Bruce except for me. And then last year, after he was so crappy, like you said, Van, after I got him, and oh my God, I traded him for like peanuts, and now I wish I had him. I did manage to get him in a league or two, but just because I like Jay Bruce. But yeah, I think that you're looking at probably 3,100 from with a mediocre batting average. Our last guy that we're gonna talk about here, Rougned Odor. Off to a really rough start, 143 plate appearances so far, 6 home runs, so that's nice, 14 runs, 16 RBI, 1 stolen base, but hitting just 193, 238, 370. So, Nate, are you buying low on the Odor?
Oh, that rough odor coming out of Texas.
It's stinky.
Yeah, it finally works. You know, I mean, doesn't he have a brother with the same exact name? Like, am I making
that up? Same exact name. I was about to make a joke, but you beat me to it. Yeah.
Cruel parent. I'm not going to make a joke. That's just cruel parenting. I'm whatever. So, you want a sense of individualism? Well, too bad. It's like, you know, here, have the same exact name. Anyway, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where like Odor came from last year. I mean, apparently I was late to the party on that this guy was going to ever do something like hit 30 homers with 14 steals. I mean, Texas obviously accentuates the power of anyone. You know, I think you play your home games there and you get everyday at bats. You're probably looking at a half a dozen more homers than you would in some other places. I don't know. I mean, I don't own him anywhere. I wasn't really in on him. He's a solid player. He's better than what he's doing. Maybe buy low, but I don't think anybody's really looking to get rid of him after the season he had last year.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, man?
Yeah. Well, he's 24, I think. So he's very young. Now, this is the prime example. And I'm kind of glad that this happened because I can point it out because I say this all the time. If you are a player who walks, when you slump, your slumps don't look as bad. He does not walk, and his slump looks horrible. And he just looks just awful. So I think this is also a key point to make that I'm not too worried about this because he's got that Adam Jones school of hitting where he hits for a good average but never walks. So I think when he starts turning around, he'll be fine. And I think he does have power. He does have some runs. Just – like I said, when he slumps, it's going to look like this. It's going to look really, really bad. So I'm still in on him, particularly because of the age, where he plays, his position. But maybe just if you have a good filler on your bench, put the filler in until this guy starts to turn it around.
Yeah, it's definitely that profile that is very prone to slumps. You look at his swing strike rate, contact rate, all that stuff, chase rate over 40%. That's him epitomized. He's just going to swing at everything. And he's still got the exact same numbers. Hard contact rate, still pretty nice. Never walks, strikes out. He doesn't strike out a ton, but I kind of just threw up my arms and bought in like this preseason. I had hated on him pretty much ever since he came in the league, just because, like you said, he never walks and he strikes out. And the stolen base efficiency was very poor. He was only 14 for 21 last year, and he's only 1 for 4 so far this year, yet they keep letting him run for some reason. So I just kind of threw up my arms and said, okay, well, I guess he can hit bases even though he sucks at stealing them. They're just going to let him fly. I can't imagine that that's going to keep going on. I mean, with such poor efficiency, I think that at some point they're going to pull a plug. He's already been hitting lower in the batting order, but yeah, he's still a buy low for me. I think the batting average will come back up to around 250 the rest of the way. He's going to hit for plenty of power, and it's a nice lineup there, so that will float his value a little bit. But I'm kind of with you guys. I've never been the biggest Odor fan, so I'm not too terribly surprised by this, but I think he'll ride the ship. So depending on which feed you have, we might take a break right about here. And we're back, and we're going to talk about the bullpen report. Smooth transition right there, depending on whether you're listening to the Blog Talk Radio feed or not. Let's talk some bullpens real quick. Let's start in San Francisco, where Melanson has gone to the disabled list. Who is closing for the Giants? I think perhaps that, well, to a certain extent, that answer has already been answered, Van. A 2 earned run save for Derek Law today. Do you think that's sort of a vote of confidence, or are you feeling less confident in Derek Law based on the shaky first performance as closer?
I think he's fine. I'm not too worried about it. He did get the save. Now, I'm going to present you a picture. It's interleague play. You're coming up. It's the bottom of the ninth. San Francisco's up by 1 run. It's been a pitcher's duel. Derek Law's got 2 outs. Who steps up to the plate? Who will win in the victory or in the contest between Aaron Judge and Derek Law? I want nothing more for that to happen in the world. But aside from that, yes, I think Derek Law's fine. Hunter Strickland's a bit of a handcuff here. I like Hunter Strickland. He throws hard. But I think Melanson's going to be on the shelf for a really short time, so I'm not too concerned about it. If Melanson's injury turns into more, I think I'll give Strickland long-term as if something comes up, he'll probably be the closer for the rest of the season after Law eventually messes up. But I think in the interim, I think Law will be just fine.
Do you agree, Nate?
I think the Giants might wish they had Casilla and Romo back at this point. it's Strickland and Law. It's going to be interchangeable. And as Van said, I don't think this is a long-term thing for Melanson, and they're paying him so much money, there is no way he is moving out of that closer role unless his arm literally falls off. Maybe they should move Samardzija out of the rotation, though, and put him at the back of the bullpen. It was once upon a time he was a decent reliever, and he's not starting pitcher after I was kind of high on him after an 11 strikeout performance two times ago, and that's what I.
Yeah, he is. He's always a disappointment, Jeff Samardzija. I'm so glad he's not on my dynasty team anymore. Seems not to be too terrible for Melanson, but I feel fairly confident with Law. I mean, Strickland was literally owned in all of my leagues already, so I managed to snipe Law in a couple places. Him in the interim, unless he just totally craps the bed. But Detroit, where the Tigers have demoted the esteemed Francisco Rodriguez. So, Nate, we'll start with you. Is Justin Wilson a must-own closer now?
Yes. I mean, that's the simple way. It's K-Rod, you know, I've long loved you. Van is an Angels fan. He'll remember the real good days of K-Rod when I owned him in every fantasy league. I think I might own him in fantasy football leagues. It's just he was that dang good. But I think the question is here, what happens to K-Rod? Because Justin Wilson is the Tigers closer now. You got to own him everywhere. K-Rod, does he go to the Hall of Fame or not? That's the question.
Yeah, hell yeah. That's my vote. Do I get a vote?
Oh, yeah. It's mine as well.
You can call yourself a journalist, then maybe they'll let you in. One of these cranky old guys will die, and you can get their vote.
I've been called a lot of things. A journalist is not one of them. Van, do you have anything else to add?
I'm all in on Justin. Why did I just drop blank on his name? I can't believe I forgot his name because I haven't been in a ton of leagues. Yeah, Justin Wilson. I forgot the name Wilson. Stop and think about that for a moment. Yeah, no, I'm all in for him. I think K-Rod's pretty much done. He had a great career. I think the Hall of Fame thing is interesting. I have to look at the numbers, but I also hate relievers in that regard, so I don't know. But I think Wilson quickly becomes a really good second-tier closer. I mean, he's not going to be your Kenley Jansens or your Aroldis Chapmans, but he's a really good pitcher, and I think he's going to be well-equipped to do the job, and he's going to get a ton of saves.
I do not disagree, so we shall move on to Washington. Seriously, Matt Albers, is this what we're doing now? Matt Albers, is that a thing? We saw Eni Romero blow a save yesterday, two earned runs. So, I mean, what the hell is going on here, Van? What's the turmoil in Washington?
Well, look at it this way. Kota Glover is scheduled to come back this weekend, so I think that's going to be who they immediately plug back in that role because neither Albers or Eni or whatever can't hold that job. And I think ultimately this year a trade still happens. Maybe Kelvin Herrera, maybe still David Robertson, the Admiral. We don't know. But I think short term it's not even worth looking at Albers or whatever because Glovers is going to come back this weekend. So there's your answer, at least in the short term.
Is that what you're doing too, Nate?
Now, how funny is it going to be if they trade for Joaquin Soria instead?
The Mexicutioner.
With the Nationals bullpen, maybe they should trade for both Herrera and Soria. But I hope they don't because I've already picked up Soria because I think Herrera, if he doesn't go to the Nationals, he's probably going to go somewhere. Kota Glover was the guy I was investing in draft season. And then you the writing was on the wall. We all knew this was coming, right? Dusty Baker's like, hey, watch me. Blake Trinan, he's the closer, and the Nationals bullpen goes to hell in a literal handbasket. and Matt Albers, he's probably going to get two or three more saves, and then somebody else is going to get some, and then somebody else. And then somebody else, and they'll probably try to cap Steven Strasburg's innings for no good reason and put him at the back of the bullpen. So, whatever.
Oh, so glad we heard from the Braves fan, the take on the Nationals. Those announcers hate the Nationals. Oh, my good Lord. Baltimore, yes. Let's give Van, you and Ron some props for sort of calling this. You were really worried about the Zach Britton forearm injury. He came off the DL very, very shortly. He's back there already. He's going to be there for 6 to 8 weeks. And it's going to be Brad Brock in the interim. Does anybody have any opinion? I mean, obviously Brock is most owned, and he's going to be the guy to own moving forward. Is there any dissenting opinions on that, or can we move on?
I used to love those candies as a kid, man.
They're nasty. It's just like burnt sugar. That's all it is.
Well, maybe he's just burnt sugar. That's what we're calling him from now on.
Burnt sugar. I like it. We'll go with that.
Oh, yeah.
I will point out he just blew a save tonight. He gave up 3 runs and a third of an innings, but I mean, I don't care. It's fine. Oh. All this does for me is cement the fact that I will never attempt to own Zach Britton in a league again. I've seen too much, so it's just not worth it with relievers being in the state that they are.
I would say this. I'm looking at the numbers now. He definitely did blow a save, so maybe tomorrow's a new O day in Baltimore.
Oh. If you're going to hedge, I would definitely do that. But, I mean, more importantly, guys, let's think about this real quick. What is the worst candy of all time?
It might be. No, it's candy corn, probably.
Oh, it's any brand. It doesn't even matter. Chocolate covered cherries are the worst thing on earth.
Oh, how dare you? How dare you?
See, I don't think if anything has fruit in it, it should be considered candy. Okay, all right. You're going to get me on a tangent here. A good friend of mine that I mentioned earlier, Justin, works for Little Debbie. Like, he's one of their, higher ups or something or other. So he gets snack cakes all the time. I refer to those snack cakes as candy because they're primarily sugar. Hmm. Is that considered candy for you guys? Would you call like a ho-ho or whatever candy?
No, I've never called it that.
Oh, you're wrong.
It's little. Some people. It's one of those things. Some people just refer to it as the brand name. It's a pastry. I guess that's.
Yeah.
At some point, it's kind of a cake. I mean, I think that Little Debbie makes so many different things. As far as worst candies, and this is one as, like, I find myself eating it even though it's disgusting. Like, what is a circus peanut?
What is that?
Nobody knows.
Like, made of dough?
Yeah.
I think it's actually a candy coated, like, styrofoam peanut.
Sounds legit. It tastes like one.
Yeah, those and candy corn were the ones that immediately came to mind. But just because of the novelty, I can't hate on them too much. I think that, I mean, black licorice is horrendous, and I can't imagine anybody eating it. But if I were to think of an actual sort of candy, like Twizzlers, why does anybody eat Twizzlers? They're just sort of bland, and they stick to your teeth, and they're just not good. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, some people really like that. See, I won't say, even though I personally do not like peanut butter cups, I don't like the mixture of chocolate and peanut butter. I know tons of people.
What was wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know tons of people do, so I didn't offer that up. I will say this. I'm a huge fan of Jelly Bellies, just jelly beans in general. But they make some of flavors. It is literally the worst candy on earth. Go find a bag of Jelly Bellies and eat all the buttered popcorn flavor that you can.
Yeah.
They are so disgusting. It's it's one of those things. And candy corn, speaking of that, if you guys, you're probably familiar with the comedian Lewis Black, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Go back years ago. He used to do a spiel on candy corn. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I know the exact one. And then the last one I'm going to mention, and these are those, they're like a Tootsie Roll, but they're orange, or they're like different flavored. Yeah, those are vile.
No, they're amazing. I completely disagree. Tootsie Rolls, like, my wife yells at me for buying Tootsie Rolls. She's like, that's not real chocolate. I'm like, I don't care what it is. I love
it. Not a regular Tootsie Roll. Those are okay.
No, the vanilla ones are the best ones.
we're going to have to do a whole
podcast. I love how Brad Brack led to us talking about, like, our dental bills.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now that we've talked about candy for, nigh upon 5 minutes, let's just gloss over these prospects because I have a life to live and we got to wrap this show up. Go check out BigGuyFantasySports.com. Reese Hoskins and Tyler Beatty were the guys that were talked about by the great Ron Rigney, who we all know and love from the show before. And the two guys that I was going to bring up just to mention, Ronald Acuna, he just got promoted to AA this year. I don't have to bring this up for you, a Braves fan over there, but he's got a lot of power that he has yet to tap into. Don't be dissuaded by the 32% strikeout rate with just 6% walks so far. Before this, every stop in his career, he's walked at a double-digit clip. Just 19 years old, going to Double A, going to be one of the youngest guys there. own future center fielder. And then Tristan McKenzie, Sticks, as they like to call him, because he's 6'5", 165 pounds. He will fall through your floorboards. But he struck out. He's getting some love now. He struck out 14 guys over six shutout innings this past Tuesday, 195 ERA at high A. Just a ton of strikeouts and some pretty nice upside.
I have to say, I had the best mental picture there of like a really skinny dude stuck in a floor vent. Like, after you said this, like, yeah, I don't know. I just go off the rails quite often.
It's just a little bit too cold because it's kind of the floor vent, but it's not too uncomfortable.
All right, guys, let's move on. We're going to finish out the show here with our weekend streaming. So who do we got real quick? Nate, let's start with you.
Trevor Cahill, didn't we already talk about him? Yeah, that's for me. He's owned in 46% of Yahoo leagues. That needs to go on up because, like we said, ride the wave here. If you're looking in really deep leagues, though, just owned in only 2%. Yahoo was the only place I looked for him. But Tim Edelman in Cincinnati talked about the Reds rotation. I mean, this guy, he's been okay lately. He struck out 11 batters over his last 11 innings. It's really that matchup with the Giants. He is a right-handed pitcher, and the Giants just have posted a 218, 277, 335 slash line opposite righties. If you're looking really deep this weekend, Tim Edelman might not be a bad place to go.
Tim Edelman, there you have it. Man, what do you think?
Two guys for you. I've got Andrew Cashner. He's been pretty good this year. He's facing Oakland at home in Texas, which Texas is the best place. But aside from Yonder Alonso, there's not a whole lot to worry about in that lineup. Scott Feldman faces the Giants in San Francisco. The Giants are the second worst in the majors in runs scored this year. That's on Saturday. Both of those guys could be decent streamers that you can get some value out of.
Yes, I also second Feldman. He was on my list. I will say R.A. Dickey at Miami on Friday. He could pitch a shutout. He could give up 10 earned runs in two innings. But in a deeper league, I'm willing to stream him. And then Daniel Norris. This is my weekly Daniel Norris recommendation. Maybe this week he'll finally come through pitching against fans, Angels in Anaheim. So go
possibly
Daniel
Norris. Troutless Angels.
Possibly troutless, potentially Pujolsless as well. We'll see.
That sounds dangerous.
Thanks, all the listeners, for putting up with my less than stellar audio. And thanks for you guys for putting up with all the technical difficulties that we had before. We can check Nate out, of course, at Fantasy Alarm and Sporting News, as well as Big Guy Fantasy Sports. Ben, you can be found at ButuInc.com and, of course, doing the backup catcher. And I can be found on Fantastics Insider Baseball and Big Guy Fantasy Sports. I will not be gracing the SiriusXM crew this weekend, though, as I have many other activities to do. But until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.